Các bạn đang lắng nghe The Insight Podcast. Đây là nơi những câu chuyện về văn hóa và xã hội được kể bởi những vị khách khác nhau. Mình là Linh và mình chúc các bạn có những giây phút lắng nghe thật vui vẻ.
Welcome to the Insight Podcast. This is Ling from the Insight Podcast, and today we have a very special guest. This is Matthew Fieldman. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very good. The Insight and I are so glad and happy to have you on our episode today. Matt is working in human trafficking field and modern slavery. He's an author. He's also the founder and CEO of the Mekong Club. And we are excited to know more about Matthew and his work during his 30 years of experience in social work.
My career started about 30 years ago. I was living and working in Nepal for USAID, an organization that basically funds NGOs and governments. I was a public health officer, and my job was basically to take resources and translate them into healthier people. At the time, we were finding girls 12, 13 years old who were HIV positive. Couldn't understand what was going on. That's a sexually transmitted disease, a very young age group. So we went to go and talk to the girls. When we had these discussions, we heard pretty much the same story over and over. Human trafficker, guy around 20 years old, would go into a village, flash a bunch of money around, say he's looking for a wife. I want an urban wife, he'd say, I want a village wife. He'd find a girl 12, 13 years old, not uncommon in that part of the world to get married at that age. He'd befriend her, he'd go to the family and say, I want to marry your daughter. Family said, wow, he's rich, he's handsome, going to take care of our daughter, he's going to take care of us. A couple of days later, they actually have a wedding ceremony. After that, he goes to the family and says, I'm going to take your daughter to the capital, Kathmandu, but don't worry, I'll be back in 3 months. But that isn't what's going to happen. Instead of taking her to Kathmandu, he takes her to Mumbai, India, to the red light district where the brothels are. He puts her in a room and he says, honey, stay here. I'll be back in a few minutes. As she was coming in, she saw all these men and women milling around. You know, they looked funny the way they were dressed. She says, no, 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 don't leave me. He says, it's okay. I'll be back in a few minutes. He then goes to the madam to get the $500 for having sold her to the brothel. He has the gold from the wedding and he hands the wedding pictures over. He then leaves to go back to Nepal to do this again and again, maybe 40, 50 times in a year. After that, the madam goes into the room where the girl is and says, guess what? Your husband just sold you to me and you're going to be with 20 guys a day, every day, because I say so. You can imagine her shock. No, no, no. My husband loves me. No, that's what happens. When she internalizes this, many of the girls say, I'll kill myself before I do those shameful things. The madam then brings the photograph of the wedding and says, is this your mom, your dad, your brother? If you hurt yourself, we'll hurt them. To make a long story short, she's now in a situation where she is forced to have sex with 10, 20 guys a day. And in order to get her to do that, they shame her. So they bring in a couple of professional rapists. Over a two-day period of time, they rape this girl 30 times until she just lays back and accepts whatever happens to her. After that, she's put on the line, which means that she will be with 20 guys a day, every day. So I was hearing this story over and over again. And every time I heard it, I just got more and more bothered and upset by it. Something about who I was, whenever I heard this, the injustice of what was going on just made me feel like I needed to do something. But it wasn't until I actually went to those brothels that I understood the sheer evil of this. I was invited by the Indian government to do public health checks. I was with a police officer. We were going from brothel to brothel. I went into one of the brothels and it was an 11-year-old trafficking victim. This child saw this Caucasian man, saw an opportunity, literally ran up and wrapped herself around me and said, save me, save me. They're doing terrible things to me. I looked down at this child who was hysterically crying, wearing a dress 20 sizes too big because she was a child in an adult's world. I turned to the police officer and said, we need to get this girl out of here. He said, we can't do that. So what are you talking about? You're a cop. He said, well, if we try to leave, they'll kill us both. To make a long story short, we both left, came back with a lot more police, but of course she was gone. I tell this story because I wasn't one of those 15-year-olds that said, when I grow up, I want to be an activist. In fact, I did everything I could not to be one. But every once in a while, we are tested in life. That was my big test. I should have found a way of getting that girl out. And when I think back, I can think of 20 things I could have done. I could have just grabbed her, picked her up, run down the stairs. I could have had the police officer even come back, but I didn't. And after that, I suffered. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. And did what a lot of activists eventually do. I surrendered to the fact that now that I've been exposed to this, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And Thursday later, here I am having this conversation with you.
It's amazing between the most terrible feeling that you have when you hear the side of the story versus the fact that you imagine yourself that you can do something, but you can't.
To perspective, yeah. Let me just say it's 4.2 million women in the world who are in that situation. And every single day you have dozens and dozens and dozens of girls all over the world, Vietnam, China, United States, UK, that are tricked and lured into similar type of situations.
When you get to hear an article and it says that today we have more human traffickers, more women are being sexual harassed, what is the cause that makes you actually think that human trafficking, it's so hard for activists or for us to make an action towards it to decrease the percentage?
Well, let me give you some numbers. So around the world, it's estimated there are 40 million people in what's called modern slavery, also pretty much the same thing as human trafficking. These names are pretty much interchangeable. Out of that, about 25 million are in forced labor. 16 million of them are associated with the private sector where we buy our goods and various other things. I'll come back to that number a little bit later. But out of 40 million people last year, with all of the governments and the United Nations and NGOs combined, the world helped about 108,000. Now, if you put those two numbers together, that means that collectively we are helping 0.2% of the victims. 0.2% of the victims of the type of crime that I described to you. Now, we have to also recognize that it's not just women and girls who are in this situation, men and boys. An example of that would be a 15-year-old boy who's told that he can go on a fishing boat in Thailand, go out for a couple of months, he'll make a lot of money, he's going to be a hero to his family. He gets on the boat goes out, it doesn't come back after 3 months. It stays out for 4 years. This poor kid will end up working 19, 20 hours a day, every day. If he doesn't, he gets beat and he gets tortured. The only food he'll eat the entire time he's there is rice and fish, nothing nutritious. If he gets injured, gets sick, they throw him off the side of the boat. At the end of the 4 years, the boat comes in and gets nothing. Or another example would be when I was living working in Bangladesh, two-year-old boys were being trafficked from Bangladesh to the Middle East. And, you know, what do you do with a two-year-old? They don't have the manual dexterity concentration to do forced labor. What do you do with them? Well, you put them on the back of a camel. Why? Because if you put an infant in the back of a camel, what do? They kick and scream. And what does the camel run? So they race camels. They use infants because they fight and they won't slow them down. And then they gamble on, you know, on the races. After a couple of years, the kid's beginning to gain weight, slowing the camel down, so they take these kids and throw them out into the street. Three are just a couple of examples, but what we're talking about is there's 4 million people in this situation. We're not even helping 1% of it, these kids. Part of the reason is this: the profits generated from modern slavery are estimated to be $150 billion. Now that's nine zeros. We're talking about a lot of money that's generated from that. The amount of money that's available to fight this is about $350 million or 0.23% of the profits. So the resources that they get are this big, and the resources that we have to fight it is very small. Another thing is there's about 20,000 people in the world who do what I do, fight human trafficking. There are 500,000 greed-incentivized criminals. These criminals, they can mutate and change and evolve anytime they want. And as a result of that, you have a situation where they have a comparative advantage over us. We have to follow rules and regulations and laws, and they don't.
The amount of money that you just gave it comes up to billions. The numbers I mentioned come from resources in the world or in specific region or just in the US?
The 150 generally talks about globally. So that would be, and just to put human trafficking situation into perspective, 62% of people who are modern slaves are in Asia. Now, let me just kind of define what a modern slave is. People say, well, there's a lot of people being exploited. You know, are they modern slaves? The simplest definition is this. If a person is working in a situation and they can't leave because of debt or threats and they don't get paid, that's what we call human trafficking. So if a person's working in a factory in Thailand, they're getting paid hardly any money, but they can walk out the door anytime they want, and that wouldn't be human trafficking. It's human exploitation or work exploitation. We're really talking about people who are locked in place.
When you interview the people in the locking place, what is the limit part of the stories of being told?
Yeah, just the people we interview would be people who are raised or rescued took place. And so, you know, somebody identified a factory as having forced labor. And when I was with the United Nations, we would be on standby after the raid to help out with the interviewing of the victims afterwards. So much of it happens afterwards. Now, when we interview traffickers, I was living and working in Bangladesh, and we would go into the prisons. And during the time that we were in the prisons, we would talk to them. Now, initially, when we tried to interview, they said, no, we're not human traffickers. We didn't do anything wrong. We're victims. But the thing about criminals is they are narcissistic. And so what we realized is if I pointed over there and said, that guy, Ali over there, is one of the best criminals I've ever seen. He's an amazingly genius criminal. And I say this to Muhammad looks and says, I'm better than him. And before you know it, he'll tell you everything about what he's doing and how they're doing it. So we interview both trafficking victims. We hear a sad story, but we also interview, the traffickers themselves. And you get a different feeling from that. It sends a shiver down your spine. I remember this one guy who we interviewed who said that he was recruiting 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds to work in a factory. Now, this particular factory took this very toxic substance from a big barrel and had to put them into small containers. So the people who ran this factories basically were trafficking adults, but because it was so toxic, after 3 months, their brain was mush. They couldn't think anymore. But if you get a child in that situation, they're good for 6 months because their brain is fresh. So here you have a child who's in a factory, horrible fumes, eventually is going to lose much of his mental capacity because of this. And these guys were bragging about this and talking about, I wonder how their parents felt when we took their kids away. Aha. Wow, really scary stuff. I also met a trafficker in Hanoi, about 10 years ago. I was still working with the United Nations. A guy calls up and says, you Mr. Friedman? Yes. Do you work for the United Nations? Yes. Can I interview? I'm interested to learn about human trafficking. It happens all the time, And so we met near the lake in Hanoi at a nice restaurant. And I sat down and for 40 minutes, I told him about, what we do and how we do it. And then I turned to him and I said, what do you do? He says, well, human trafficker. I said, excuse me? He says, yeah, I'm a trafficker. I traffic women and girls and various other people. For years, I always went to sit down and talk to somebody like you. Thank you so much. This guy was well-educated. He was well-dressed. He was funny. He was charming. And he was a trafficker. So I had two choices. I could either sit down and talk to him or I could get really upset and walk away. I chose to talk to him. And what was interesting is that he kept saying over and over again, you are ridiculous. You put on your website what you're doing, how you're doing it, and whenever you need to change what you're doing, you'll have to go to the donors and get permission. You have to follow laws. I don't have to do any of these things. He handed me his card. He says, go ahead and try to catch me. I'm so well insulated. I'm so covered. I know all of the people here. Nothing's going to happen. It was a very sober day for me. But I learned a lot from him because he was quite open to sharing his stories, he did and how he did it. So it's quite interesting, you know, these criminals, they're very narcissistic. They're very confident. They don't going to get caught. And to a certain extent, they're wrong because, you know, out of the 500,000 criminals that are in the world, last year, we only had about 7,000 of them in jail, which is 0.8%.
It's also confused me when you said that a trafficker actually contact to you, claim himself to be a trafficker. In which scale of human trafficking law that would apply those specific situation if he were to contact an authorization?
Because I wasn't law enforcement, I have no authority. And because I'm a foreigner who are traveling to Vietnam, I'm just a United Nations person. Now, if he had said that to a law enforcement person, perhaps in Vietnam, maybe would have been arrested or maybe something would have happened. But I think he understood that, you know, I don't speak Vietnamese. Even if his card, he could deny that we had this conversation. There's 100 reasons why he could just, you know, say that this never happened. And as a result of that, you know, he felt like he could just have this conversation with me and talk about how this is how I run my business and this is what I do. But you have to understand that because the legal response is so low in so many countries, these criminals feel entitled, feel emboldened. They feel like they can do anything that they want because so few people ever really find themselves in a situation where they get caught.
Psychologically saying, if he knows in advance that he could say those things without getting caught, the people that goes after him decide to do the same thing. There's a many people can claim themselves to be a human traffickers and an activist, but we could not know how many truths were actually in those stories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who brag about all kinds of things. I'm convinced he was a human trafficker. I'm convinced he was just basically poking a stick at a person who responds to human trafficking. I think he had some fun with the conversation because, again, I don't think that he thought he was going to get caught. But what I do these days, so I'm the CEO of an organization called the Mekong Club. And the Mekong Club works with companies and corporations, both in the finance world and manufacturing, retail, and hospitality, to basically work with them to help them to understand the issue of human trafficking so that they can find it and address it. So let me give an example of why they would be interested in this topic. $150 billion generated from modern slavery is illegal money. It's money that comes from criminal activity. And you know, if any of that gets into a legitimate bank, it's money laundering. Okay, so there was a bank in Australia who wasn't paying attention and allowed for transactions to take place related to online sexual exploitation of children. And they were fined $1.3 billion, which is a huge amount of money. So the banks will aggressively and actively try to figure out which transactions associated with the bank might be associated with human trafficking. And so many banks are working on that now. When it comes to the manufacturers are afraid of sweatshops being in their supply chain. So let's say that you're a fashion house or a running shoe manufacturer. You have different tiers of manufacturing. You have tier one where you assemble the shoe. Tier two is where the rivets and the shoelaces and the zippers come from. Three is where the raw material comes from. Most companies have been auditing tier one, but they don't really know what's happening in tier two or three. So we work with those companies to help them to understand how to find out what's going on at that level. In the hospitality industry, you have women and girls who are used in hotels related to forced prostitution, like that case that I described at the beginning. So we work with hotels to help them to understand what they need to do to protect themselves. So by working with the private sector, we're opening up a new front. It's not just the governments or the NGOs of the United Nations. Now the private sector is also stepping up and getting involved.
Also interesting that you which is mentioned the organization that the Mekong Club and the organization that you previously working for related to included banks, governments. Can you share with us about the solution campaigns startup companies could be taken stepped forward in this field?
Yeah, I mean, anyone could basically play a part to address modern slavery. One of the things that's really important is to raise awareness. So by listening to a podcast like this, people can learn about an issue. And then from that, they can go online and they can do searches for articles or YouTube videos. And then based on that, they can go and tell their friends what they saw, what their tell their colleagues. They can pass the information on to their family, either just talking about this or through social networking. So there's many ways of raising awareness, and that adds value. Another thing is there are organizations like ours that take volunteers. We have volunteers that are professional staff. In fact, we have a couple of volunteers from Vietnam that work with us in Hong Kong. And these individuals have marketing skills, or they have banking skills, or they have supply chain skills. And we work with them so that they can contribute to helping our work to move forward. They do that remotely. We don't have to have them come to Hong Kong to work with us. We can communicate with them through Zoom or Skype or whatever it is, and then identify what needs to be done. Another thing people can do is to be responsible consumers. You know, there are a lot of companies out there who make things, but on their websites, because of legislation, they have statements that basically talk about their policy related to human trafficking. If you're going to go to a mall and you're going to go to a shop that is branded, before you do that, go online to see whether or not that shop has a policy on human trafficking. If they do, congratulate them. There's always an info email you can send. If they don't, say, listen, I like your products, but I would feel a lot better if basically there was some policy that you had on your website. And the last thing is, you know, even just fundraising or donating. You know, to keep a girl in a shelter in Cambodia who had been in forced prostitution cost about $5 US a day, you know, which isn't that much money. Maybe the state or the government will pay for 2 weeks. Maybe she needs another 2 weeks. So a donation to an organization that helps people can be a great contribution. So anyone and all of us can play a role in addressing modern slavery. And the idea is that if you could get a million people to do one thing a year, that's a million kind, compassionate gestures to help. So the reason why I'm saying this is it leads to kind of the point that in order for us as a world to really address something like human trafficking, we as human beings all have to understand the issue and get involved. And if we did that, then we wouldn't be at 0.2%. Maybe we would be at 2% or 5% or 10%, because there's not enough people like me who work on this full time to be able to address this big problem. And it's the same thing I say about all problems, whether it's poverty or education or bullying or, you know, any of the other issues that we face in our world. If you look at the percentage of impact that we're having, it's always less than 5%. We collectively, the world, have to do that. And that's why we set up the Be the Hero campaign. The Be the Hero campaign says to people, find out what your cause is, find out what it is that makes you feel like you want to get contributing, and then do something. Even if it's raising awareness or basically raising money or volunteering, whatever it is that you feel like you want to do, go ahead and do that. And if we could get the world to do that, the world would be a much better place.
You do the campaign, Be the Hero campaign, books and also documentaries and articles, blogs, videos. You also believe in the heroism in every individual's. Let's talk more about that. Why do you think the Be the Hero campaign is a title that you choose and the expectation you would think that come out of this campaign?
a lot of people think heroism is when a person runs into a burning house and grabs the child and pulls them out, a very courageous act. Or there's a woman who's about to be hit by a bus and somebody takes their own life in their hands and runs and grabs her. And at the last moment, the bus goes by, but he saves the woman. Heroism means that, but what we've also done is redefined what heroism is. Heroism for me is when a person does a selfless act of kindness for the earth or animals or for people with no expectation of getting anything in return. It's a kindness, it's a kind gesture, you know, and it comes naturally to us as human beings. If somebody is walking in front of us and they trip and they fall, we don't hesitate to help them get up. We do it naturally. It's just part of what human beings do. So we've said that when you help somebody or the earth or the planet or whatever, then that's heroic. It's kind of like a like on Facebook. You're endorsing and validating and supporting people and saying you did something good. So we've lowered the bar from, you know, it having to be this courageous, life-defying act to simple acts. And so what we're really just trying to do is to say to people is each of us has a cause. My cause is human trafficking. I did not pick that cause. That cause picked me. And that's the way it is for most people. There's something about our DNA that attracts us to certain things. My sister was attracted to animal rights. I know other people who are attracted to global warming. They don't know why they are attracted to it, but there's something about that. So the first thing we have to do is to identify what our cause is. After we've done that, we need to accept some responsibility. So if it's human trafficking, I'll accept some responsibility that I should do something to address this. The third thing is that we have to stop those voices in our mind that say, yeah, I want to do something, but I'm too busy, or what do I have to offer, or what if I start doing this and I don't like it, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to kind of surrender to the fact that I'm just going to do something and then I have to get on with it. So all the Be the Hero campaign is attempting to do is to just get people to cross over that line from thinking about doing something to actually doing it. But we do it in the form of baby steps. Little acts of kindness. You start with that and then you go a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. In the book that Be the Hero, this is it here, helps people to understand, you know, how they go through that journey. The last thing I'll say about this is that in order to write the book, I talked to hundreds of people and I interviewed them. And what I heard over and over again was a statement like, I feel like there's a certain emptiness or lack of purpose in my life. I like my job. I like the fact I'm a student, but there seems to be something missing. Oftentimes that missing piece is giving something back to the world. So what we do is we take, but we don't give. And so there's an imbalance here. When you start giving, that balance is in check. And all of a sudden you start feeling better about yourself. You feel that emptiness go away, that lack of purpose goes away. So it's not just about giving to somebody, it's also about getting something back.
It's a very good point. And you are absolutely right about we receiving the resources that we have, receiving all of those things without hesitation to one day be thinking that we could do something to return. The cost that finds each and every one of us. So as I understand that all of us, we all have our own cause. You have a passion for human trafficking and the cause is that finds you and you find the motivation to actually step up and do campaigns to start organization that completely dedicate to prevent human trafficking and modern slavery. How do you think that cause actually affected us to care about another cause? For example, if my cause were to care about the environment, the gender discrimination, there's a lot of campaigns, it's a lot of movements around us. If only care about our own cause.
Sometimes I have an intern who comes in And this person, whenever I have a conversation with them, wants to talk about global warming. They're in an office that does human trafficking. They want to talk about global warming. Eventually, I go to that person and I say, I don't think you're in the right place. There's many other organizations that work on global warming. That's where your heart is. If you clearly want to be focusing on that. So we need to align the people who are interested in human trafficking with the human trafficking organizations, the people who are interested in animal rights with the animal rights organization, people who are interested in global warming with the global warming. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes somebody joins an organization as a volunteer, but it's the wrong fit. So what I often say, and I do training at schools and corporations on volunteerism, is you have to go online and watch YouTube videos and read articles and go to talks and do whatever you can to find out what your cause is. And you'll know it when you see it because you keep coming back to it. So if you're given a choice of different things to review and listen to or watch, you want to go back to that. Or if you hear there's a webinar or a podcast on that, you're drawn to it. Once you have that, the reason why I think it's important to focus on the cause that does it for you is you're going to be so much more motivated to contribute. If that cause is the wrong cause for you, it's not a lot of motivation to do stuff. So it's really important to make the match between what you have as your desire and what cause that works for you. And another thing is also to identify what skills you have. You know, when I'm doing work in schools in Bangkok, for example, there are some kids that are really good at public speaking. Some are good at poetry. Some are good at dance. Some are good at writing. Some are good at selling T-shirts. Find that thing that you're good at, find your cause, and then work on it with an organization. And that's the winning combination. Because if we contribute with what we're good at, like if a person is told that they have to do public speaking and they don't like it, they're not going to be good at it. You know, or if a person is told that they need to do coordination when they want to do writing, it's you gotta link those things up. And that's, again, another thing we try to talk about in the book, the importance of knowing yourself to know what you want to contribute because you know it's something you do well, and then linking that up with your volunteer activity.
Can you share the biggest motivation for you from your journey, from teaching to speaking, from the work that you have done through organization, and the reason why you choose to continue the journey in Hong Kong?
So when I was living and working in Thailand, I would regularly present at high schools and middle schools and so forth. Presented at a middle school in Thailand, in a seventh grade young woman, girl, came up to me and said, you know, when I go up, I want to do what you're doing. I have to do. And so, you know, we corresponded a couple of times, and eventually she went into high school and I gave her some information, and then she went off to college and I gave her some suggestions, and she went back to Thailand and she ended up doing the job that I did in Thailand.
Wow.
You know, it is. Yeah. So, and there's a lot of examples that I've had that there's certain people who are receptive to a particular message, sometimes later in life, sometimes early in life. But the receptive was certainly there for her. She knew exactly what she wanted. She was one of the ones that figured out that that was her topic and she was going to commit herself to doing it. And she did, you know, and periodically I still communicate with this young woman. So, I mean, it demonstrates the fact that at any point in life, in fact, my youngest volunteer was a 9-year-old girl from the United States. Years ago, she contacted me. She said, Mr. Friedman, you know, I saw you in a documentary and I want to help. I was with the United Nations at the time. I said, you're 9 years old. She said, so what? I said, you're 9 years old. She said, 9-year-olds are the new 16-year-olds. Give me a chance. So, you know, I said, what do you think you can do? She said, I can find anything you want on the internet. And so I gave her some opportunities. And this little girl, she was, you know, less than 10 years old, was better than my second year Yale law student at finding stuff on the internet. That was her gift. That there was something about her that she was incredibly gifted at doing it. What it demonstrates is that anyone at any age can get involved to help to address these things. Now, why is it that I work on, you know, human trafficking in Hong Kong? Why is it that I do Be the Hero? Because I see the world needs help. The world is in trouble, even post-COVID, with, you know, so many disenfranchised people, people in debt, people, you know, in situations where they lose family members, companies not working, and so forth. More than ever, the world needs help. And we know, based on experience, that the only way we're going to be able to address this help is if we can get people to step up as individuals in this world to accept some responsibility and to do something. If we don't do that, we're not going to be able to get out of this hole that we're in. So what motivates me, what drives me, is this sense of recognizing that there's so much human potential out there, so much potential for us to get everyone involved, but there are not a lot of mechanisms to help to organize that process. Everyone thinks it's got to be the governments or the non-government organizations or the United Nations or somebody else doing this, but in reality, it has to be all of us. That's pretty much what motivates me to do what I do.
What would you say to a person when you first met them and they said to you, oh, human trafficking is way out of my league. I don't know anything about it. Honestly, I barely listened any information about this. What would your response be?
I'd say go online, watch 5-10 minute videos on the topic. You'll know something after that, and then go tell other people about what it is you saw. Awareness raising is extremely important. I get in front of a lot of audiences and they never heard, you know, they got a little inkling in their mind because of articles that human trafficking is girls being forced into prostitution, but they don't have enough to really understand what it is. You know, if we do these introductory type presentations, and these presentations are, you know, about an hour. And at the end of an hour, you know, trafficking, to be able to at least have a framework in your mind for understanding how to address this particular issue. And that's what I would say, is just watch one of those videos. So you understand, you know, there's, you know, so many people don't understand the reason for, you know, hatred or racial violence, because they never really stopped to educate themselves on this. And there's many resources that are available on the internet to help you to understand these things. And I think we should explore. If you have a question about why do these things happen, there's always some source that's going to be able to answer it to you, for you.
To your mind right now, what do we all need to do besides getting the informative, provocative? What do you think the thing that we most needed right now?
We need to care. We need to care about those, you know, 4.2 million women and girls forced into prostitution, the men and the boys on the boat, the sweatshops, the 40 million people in modern slavery. We have to accept the fact that, you know, as human beings, modern slavery shouldn't exist. If we don't open up our hearts and minds to this, we're not feel their pain. And if we don't feel their pain, we're not going to do anything. So I think it's extremely important that we as human beings be open to listening to the stories, be open to feeling them and experiencing them in a way that would allow us to then say, enough is enough. Now that I know about this, I can't turn my back, and I'm going to step up and I'm going to do something.
Is there anything that you would like to share, the campaign, the ultimate tool that we could use in any age, gender, country could get to use this tool?
We have a couple of videos that we've done that kind of walk through the basic content. But, you know, when it comes to the book itself, I put it up against my shirt and you can see it. It's a very easy to understand guide to volunteering. Everything you need to know related to how to become a volunteer, what to do, why you do it, how to do it, is just written down. And it's written through a storytelling approach to help people to really simply understand it. And, you know, we have schools, we have corporations, we have various groups that are using the as a means of just trying to convince their community to be a part of the solution. And so, you know, my kind of call to action is, if you really feel like you're one of those people that feels there's a lack of purpose and you want to kind of move forward and do something, read the book and you'll have an understanding of what you need to do.
You'll get motivated. Exactly. Well, thank you, Matthew Freeman, for an excellent talk on the show. And I could not say how grateful I am to actually talk to you and get to know about this topic, because there's a certain feeling when we think that we know something, but we actually don't.
That's right.
And yeah, it's a very meaningful topic that we could really discuss.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the forum, and thank all of the people who watch this. And we hope that this will give you some insights and some ideas that you can do in your own life.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Matt, again, for your amazing talk. To your mind, you can also order Matt's books on Amazon, available on all regions. Yes, and you can also visit his website and his campaign. I will put the link in the description below. And also, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask. We will contact you the soonest. Thank you for listening. We wish you have a great weekend, and we will see you in the next episode.